you know, they've lobbied against it forever. And again, midwives have been persecuted and prosecuted, arrested. I myself, in 1997, was arrested for practicing midwifery in New York State.
You were arrested?
Yes, I was in 1997.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners? Homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
In this episode, we have Roberta Devers joining us, a certified professional midwife and the heart behind Mountain Laurel Midwifery. With over 30 years of experience and 1,500 births attended. Wow, mind-blowing number. She offers home birth services across Lancaster, Berks, Chester, and Montgomery counties. Roberta is passionate about giving families not only safe and personalized care, but also empowering birth experiences rooted in dignity and choice. We'll explore the growing maternity care crisis, like maternal mortality rates, and why expanding access to home birth and midwifery, is that correct?
It's a short I when you add the Y.
Midwifery.
Makes that mistake. Midwifery. Don't feel bad.
Sorry.
Everyone makes that mistake.
That a lot. Midwifery can be part of the solution. Roberta, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here and we get to record and sit down and discuss, you know, midwifery.
Right. Okay, that's good. It. You got it.
I nailed it. Okay, good. And I wanted to shout out Vanden. He is the founder of Moondragon Fitness, and he was actually on the podcast. It was episode 136, and that's how we got in touch.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And do you care to share? I know you did off air with me, but how did you first meet Vanden, and what's the connection there?
I don't know who recommended him, but I thought I'd treat myself on my 62nd birthday to a personal training session, and he's a personal trainer. So in the course of that, he was talking about a podcast he had done with you, and I thought you should have midwifery subjects on your podcast. So,
and he does a phenomenal job. I mean,
yeah,
very outside of the box when it comes to fitness and, yeah, you know, and activities and just moving the body. And it was a really neat episode for the listeners. I highly recommend you go back, take a listen. And we cover everything from working out and doing activities outside and to different, not weapons, but different equipment you can use that's different than just weights and a treadmill and the same boring stuff you've been doing at Planet Fitness all the time. So anyway, shout out to Vanden, and let's dive in. Roberta, can you begin by sharing how you became a midwife and what led you to start Mountain Laurel Midwifery?
Good job, by the way, midwifery, right? So 40 years ago, I hate to date myself, but it was 40 years ago, I had a home birth, and one of the women who attended that birth was Hillary Schlinger. She and I are still friends to this day, 40 years later. And, you know, just about the time she put that baby in my arms, the baby who's now 40 years old, I said to her, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And to this day, she teases me and says, I thought you were postpartum delirious when you said that.
Okay, yeah.
But it was true. A midwifery student last year said, I was born on the day she was born, referring to her own daughter. And I think that I was just so taken with who she presented herself to be as a woman. She was a Cornell graduate. She held two other state licenses. She was fierce. She was kind. She was empathic. Her clinical skills and judgment were stellar, and I still am mesmerized by Hillary. She's now a midwifery educator, and I just knew that I wanted to be like her. What I should say was that when she came to the birth, however, we had to hide her car in our garage because she was practicing illegally in the state of New York, because New York did not recognize home birth midwives at that time, nor do they now. And I guess I became obsessed with why she would risk so much to attend me.
Yeah.
And why, with two other state licenses, she wasn't able to get a license, and also with a Cornell degree. It just, I couldn't let go. And it was interesting because I gave birth in my parents' home for many, many reasons. My husband was in graduate school. And my father kept saying, you know, I built this house with my own two hands. I don't understand why, in the privacy of my own home, she had to risk so much. So it really started me on this absolute trail, if you will, to what is this all about? Mm-hmm. You know, it became more than my own individual birth. It became a cause, really. What was this?
That really, it sounds like it set you on this journey that has now become a career and something you're so passionate about.
Yes, absolutely.
Could you explain, like, how did you then decide, okay, like, I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to start this and go full bore.
Well, the first thing I had to do was figure out how to become trained, because at that point, you know, there was midwives were very delegitimized. There weren't a lot of avenues to training for home birth midwives.
Why do you think that is? Like,
well, that's a long story. We should complete this and then come back, okay, because that's a whole historical context, right?
Yeah.
So you could become a certified nurse midwife and see hospital births, but that isn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to do home births. And what people were doing throughout the country was they were training through apprenticeship models, and it was taking forever, and I didn't want to do that. So there was a clinic in El Paso, Texas, and you would go there and live. There were dormitory rooms connected. And that clinic was seeing all of the women over from Mexico who were pretty low socioeconomic and seeing a lot of complications. And so I went there and spent almost 6 months. And when I got through with Casa de Nacimiento, I had done 350 births. And they were done quite like home births would be done.
Okay, 350 in...
In 6 months.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So hands-on. You're
hands-on hands every on. Day. You lived in a dorm room and you worked in the clinic day and night.
So. What did you take away from that experience? I mean, that's a lot in a short amount of time to learn and experience.
You certainly got your skill level up in a short amount of time. I mean, you would have apprenticed for years, you know, with home birth midwives in your community to achieve the same thing. So, I had plenty of skills. Now what I needed was something on paper. So when I returned home to New York, I created a degree in maternal and infant health, and I took all that coursework around it that would create that degree and graduated with a bachelor's degree in maternal and infant health.
Okay. That is such a short amount of time, and that much experience is gained. Because you're right, you have to go to for years and years and years of schooling, you know, normally to get that.
Well, you have to put this in a historical context, right?
Okay, yes.
So post-Depression era, there was a very well-organized, propagandized campaign to eliminate the home birth midwife by the Medical Association. I mean, this is not an opinion. These are historical facts. And through the eradication of the midwife, the delegitimization of the midwife, those kinds of traditional apprenticeship models were falling away. Because some midwives would retire out of fear, midwives were being arrested, midwives were being, you know, publicly decried as being, you know, unskilled and unhygienic. And so you saw a real decimation, if you will, of home birth midwifery. Then in the 60s, there was a reclaiming of midwifery, you know, through things like the Tennessee Farm run by Anna Mae Gaskin and those kinds of movements to reclaim the feminist mm-hmm. movement was rising up. And there was a move to reclaim that kind of autonomous birth.
I always wondered why, because it seems like midwifery and midwives are... have a bad rap, you know, and I don't, or at least they did. And yeah. It's like, why? Because if you're trained, you have the experience, you have the knowledge, sometimes I feel like it's a more safer, comfortable environment for the person having.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because yeah. that's what the research shows. Every well-done study, I mean, okay. certainly the medical community likes to pull out studies, but they're not well-done. They're mm-hmm. a biased study. Somebody is paying for them. They have a dog in the fight. But the well-done studies, the randomized controlled double-blind studies, all of them show that in matched populations, low-risk women do better underneath the midwifery model of care. So
it makes sense. It's more comfortable, more relaxed, probably. I mean, it's already stressful to begin with. You know, I mean, my wife and I, we have two little ones, and you know, the stress and the women, they are so much stronger than men when it comes to, like, I couldn't believe, it's unbelievable, but the experience afterwards, like you said, it's like holding your child, holding your baby, it's like such a rush, you know?
Yeah.
And even, and again, I'm, yeah. but, you know, I was always like, oh, there's no way I'm going to black out, I can't, you know, I'm not good with blood, and, you know, anyone will tell you this, but, and not to get off topic, but I was just like, yeah, I'll, you know, clamp the cord and do all that, you know, that dad's supposed to do, and I didn't know a problem, and it's just, it's, but I could see where at home, comfort of your own home, not with lights and people that you don't know, of course, they're experts, you know, in their field and professionals and this and that, nurses and doctors and such, but sometimes it's like, it can be a daunting task, you know, to have a child alone, birth a child, but yet have people that you don't really know.
Right. I mean, look, the community midwife knew everyone intimately. I mean, she had delivered, you know, the sisters of people that she was delivering now and the brothers. And
yeah.
when she got old enough, the same children she delivered would deliver with her. I mean, she was the community midwife, and she held some indigenous knowledge that was you know, beyond what could be taught. And she also held secrets, the secrets of families. And she knew what kind of emotional support to give to each family because she knew the intricacies of families, right? And it was important care. Mm-hmm. That kind of social support has been shown through the work of Ann Oakley to be crucial to good health. And it's one that's overlooked in that kind of factory mentality in the hospital. It's not deemed as important, but home birth midwives know it's very important.
Yeah.
Very important.
Let's take a quick sip break. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. To pick back up, you know, you went down to Texas, learned a lot, got a lot of experience, then you come back up to New York, but at what point then did, and how did you come up with the name Mountain Laurel Midwifery?
Well, this is, Mountain Laurel is the state flower of Pennsylvania. So,
okay, I see where you're going. Yeah.
Sort of simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that though. Yeah. Okay. And now what all do you offer?
Frankly, we offer everything that you would get in that obstetrical model. We just do it very, very differently, right? So our prenatal care is on the same schedule. We see people once a month until 32 weeks and then every other week. And this might sound familiar to people who access the medical model of care, every other week from 32 to 36 weeks and then every week thereafter. We certainly attend people throughout their labor and their delivery, and then we attend them in the postpartum period, 1 week, 2 weeks, and 6 weeks.
Okay.
We take care of the metabolic screening. We take care of the birth certificate. We do any labs that are needed. So the standard of care in terms of the schedule and what is offered is quite similar to the medical model, but that's about all that's similar. Not very much else is similar in terms of how we attend someone.
Okay, and that's kind of falls into my next question is, how does a home birth compare to a hospital birth? I know we talked about the comfort and such.
How is it different? So in the midwifery model of care, informed consent is crucial. The risks and the scientific risks and evidence-based risks and benefits are presented to the family, mm-hmm. and they become the final decision maker. I make no decision for a family, and it may be that they would choose something that I would never choose, but they are the final decision makers. So okay. they're the final decision makers on all their lab work. They're the final decision makers on position, and as long as heart tones are okay, the length of labor, and they make those final decisions, understanding all the risks and benefits, because that often birth happens in a very, in a cultural context, in a religious context, and what might not be right for me is right for someone else. And so it's very personalized care done through informed consent. I never come in to tell people this is what you will do. And that's very different, right, than the Cartesian medical model where they're told, that on yes. this visit you will. Mm-hmm. It's just not the way we operate. So,
my wife, we're in the hospital and the doctor came in and they wanted to do something completely different than what my wife and I had told the nurses we didn't want to do. And I remember because even my wife's like, I'm proud of you. You stood up, because you have to, speak for your loved ones. But yeah, I remember the doctor came in. Okay, so we're getting ready to do this and this. And my wife and I looked at each other and we're like, no, that's not what we told the nurse. And no, we're not comfortable with you doing that. We want to keep going how we're going. She's progressing. But anyway, it seemed like it was very much like their way or the highway kind of thing.
Well, it is. Yeah. I mean, look, this is not a blame thing, right? But, the maternity care system is a mess. It's mm-hmm. not my opinion. We know it's a mess. We have more women dying in this country than we do in, third world countries. It's deplorable. Anderson Cooper reported on it last year. It's all over the news. The maternity care system in the United States is a mess. And so the idea that people, low-risk women, would go there believing that they're going to have a good outcome. The cesarean section rate is 3 times higher than the World Health Organization says it should be. The maternal mortality morbidity rate, as I just stated, is deplorable. If you're a woman of color, you're dying in numbers 2 to 3 times higher than white women. So if you're a woman of color, you're really in trouble if you're going into that system. And, we have nothing to be proud of. I really call that hospital birth for low-risk women, frankly, a failed experiment. So.
Since we're on that topic, why do you think, the U.S. has one of the highest maternal mortality rates among wealthy nations?
Birth is a business, and post-Depression era, the physicians had a well-organized, propagandized campaign that included fear to move women into the hospital system. Look, we have to understand that safety is a ruse. It has nothing to do with safety. It's been used over and over, and it's not the truth. It's safe for low-risk women to be at home. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, safer, I might say. The cascade of interventions leads to this rising cesarean rate. It's the only part of medicine that takes care of healthy, normal people. Mm-hmm. And it does so by thinking that intervening is the thing to do when, frankly, physiological birth, that being a birth that is almost left, untouched with no intervention or low intervention, works out better than when you're continuing to muck it up, if you will, by this cascade of interventions.
I have some other questions amongst that topic, but I didn't know if you wanted to go back at all and kind of cover some of the services you provide. Kind of went through, but I don't know if there's more in depth you had.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't, again, we're on the same schedule as that medical model, but mm-hmm. the difference is, in the prenatal, most prenatals are an hour long, right? So you're not waiting in the waiting room and then for a 6-minute prenatal. Mm-hmm. In our area, we go to your home. You don't come to our office. We care for a large Old Order Amish community that we absolutely adore. And so we go to their homes, and that's a real honor and pleasure. And so we do that for our English too. So it's in the comfort of your own home, mm-hmm. Where something is familiar and safe. Prenatals are usually an hour. They could be more. If there's something emotional to talk about, we're there to. And again, we become usually pretty close friends with everyone whom we deliver. And it's important to be close friends because you get to know what beyond that kind of physical does this woman need? Mm-hmm. What kind of attention does she need to feel safe? Is she more hands off? Is she afraid? Did she hear a horror story? Did her mother tell her she wouldn't do well at home? I mean, it's right. So right. We're tapping into, is she not getting along with her partner? Has she had some horrific stress and then she's faced with labor? And all of those things can impede or help women progress. And so it's important to spend time with people to understand who that person is spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And that's a piece that is left out, I think, in that obstetric model that mm-hmm. everyone in sort of a factory mentality is rushed through.
Yes.
Sometimes people hardly look up from the paperwork, your numbers, you're called certain things, you know, in the hospital, the primip, who is 5 centimeters, mm-hmm. you know, in room 52. I mean, the primip has a name and a story. She has a story.
I agree 100%. It's, you're almost just you're just a number, right? And let's get you in, get you out. And
I mean,
that's me, you know, that's my opinion.
You are a clinical case and mm-hmm. that's what they're taught in that obstetrical model. You're a clinical case.
Well, the midwifery is more personal. You take more time. It's not so much of a rush. And what I'm getting from it, and it's more like you're, I want to say almost a part of the family because you know the person.
Very much so.
A lot more in depth.
Very much so. I mean, I'm delivering now people I've delivered who are having babies.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's phenomenal. Yeah, that's talk about full circle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So what do you see as the biggest like challenges facing maternal and newborn care in the U.S. today?
Well, look, I'm going to be very frank, right? So now I get a little radical, if I might. I'm getting fairly fed up with what's happening in maternity care. You know, to be continually chided as a midwife. I think if you have been a midwife, a home birth midwife, and you're in your 60s, most of us have faced some kind of persecution or prosecution. And we've done so in the face of a crumbling maternity care system. It is a crumbling maternity care system, right?
Yeah.
The perinatal mortality morbidity rates are outrageous. The maternal mortality morbidity rates are outrageous. The cascade of unnecessary interventions is outrageous. Again, the cesarean rate is far higher than the World Health Organization says it should be, upwards of 30% in some places. And it's unnecessary. And look, birth is a business in the United States. It makes money for the hospital. It's one of the last floors that make money for the hospital. And again, I'm going to repeat myself, safety is a ruse. And so when we start to get back to what we need to do to really take care of women and families, aside from birth being a business, mm-hmm. then we're going to be able to talk about what really should be happening. We have a powerful medical lobbyist, you know, in this country and certainly in each state. They're powerful. And they've been very much against the home birth midwifery model and very much against the freestanding birth center model run by home birth midwives. You know, they've lobbied against it forever. And again, midwives have been persecuted and prosecuted, arrested. I myself in 1997 was arrested for practicing midwifery in New York State.
You were arrested?
Yes, I was in 1997.
What?
Yes, for practicing.
Could you share a little, or how did?
New York is really one of the states that has had a horrific history of let me call it non-legislation. We were lobbying for many, many years in the state of New York to legalize certified professional midwives. They're still attempting to do that. About 5 years ago, there was a midwife there whose name was Elizabeth Catlin, who was arrested in New York. She was a midwife to the Mennonite and Amish community, arrested on 95. That would be 95 felonies.
95 felonies? What?
She was. And, you know, midwives are pretty familiar with these kinds of persecutions and prosecutions, but most of us see it as, you know, the civil disobedience that is needed to stand up and continue to practice and to tell the truth. And and to use our voices to decry the current maternity care system. And there's a backlash to that.
Standing up for something you believe so strongly.
Absolutely.
So how do you, you know, now, okay, well, hold on. Okay, before I jump ahead. So, but you were personally arrested.
I was.
And what, how can you, like, what happened?
Well, I mean, this is a very long
story. You don't seem like, you know.
A criminal?
Yeah, you're not a criminal. Right, thank you.
Well, that's what they said. That's what they said. We were the top news story for two or three nights, so they would put this little headline under my face that said criminal with a question mark. Like,
yeah, yeah. I just can't see that at all.
Yeah. My family doesn't have the criminal element. It's a very long story, but there was a bill passed in New York State that was supposed to include us, and in last-minute backdoor sessions, we were excluded from the bill. That bill developed a board of midwifery. The board of midwifery, in essence, asked us to, the home birth midwives, to submit all of our credentials and training because they wanted to look at us potentially to send our training, our education, and our experience to something called the comparative ed department to see if there might be a way to allow us to still come in underneath this bill.
Okay.
And, you know, we discussed amongst ourselves whether they were telling us the truth or whether it was a way to just identify who was practicing illegally.
Oh, geez.
And sure enough, we all did submit. Many of us submitted. And just about the moment that we submitted,
no way.
I promise you, a number of cease and desist letters went out to most of the home birth midwives, and I got the arrest. So we don't believe it was an attempt to really evaluate this sort of non-traditional education and training and experience and to figure out a way to maybe include us through the comparative ed department, but rather to, and we don't know to this day, but we theorize it was a way to identify us and eliminate us. So
that's wild. That's wild.
That's what happened.
You know, you think you're trying to better society, right? Better the community, better like New York.
Well, we do better the community.
Our
statistics show that we better the community. Right, we know that we do, and the statistics show that we do.
No, and I'm not arguing that. I meant it's wild that you think you're trying to submit forms and information and then they would do that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, I think we were so desperate to be legitimized. You know, everyone would like to be legitimate. And we were for years trying to lobby to get a licensing bill. We wanted to be accountable. We wanted to submit all of our training and experience. But it's become very evident that it is not wanted. It is not, there is no road to legitimacy in the current, you know, structure. And we are not wanted. We're not wanted at all.
Which is a shame, you know, because.
Well, we think so.
I agree.
We think so.
So with it being, you know, 2025, how do you, you know, as a midwife and how does midwifery, you know, how do you, I guess, move on or present yourself in a way, you know, in these areas where you can't, you know, perform or do your services, you know, how do you shine yourself in a positive light, I guess, you know?
Well, I mean, I can only talk personally. I think some of my sister midwives would disagree with me, but I am a big believer in continuing to speak out, to continuing to be civilly disobedient. You know, civil disobedience is what has shaped this country. Mm-hmm. You can't disentangle this subject matter from race and gender. I mean, one of the eradications began with the Black granny midwife in the Deep South, and she was delegitimized, and she was touted by the medical profession as being uneducated and dirty and untrained. And it was this well thought out propagandized campaign to erase indigenous knowledge, to take control. I mean, history shows that those are not opinions. Mm-hmm. And it plays itself out in 2025. I mean, that's how we're spoken about, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, that is a wild concept. Like, you're pretty much combating the government.
Well, if that's right. Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, many of us have stood up in states that, you know, where we've asked to be included and we've been eliminated instead. And then what happens is it's not us who want to continue practicing, but families who beg of our services. So, right, it's the people who say, you know, let me tell you an interesting story. When I was arrested, you know, it was a long time ago, 1997, so we didn't know whether the office, they had a warrant to search my office, so we didn't know if the office had been bugged or what had happened, and it was on the news pretty quickly, and I had about, it must have been about 9 families due, and the families, while they would say, we're worried about you, Roberta, the next thing would be, well, who's going to do our birth?
Yeah, what do they do? Right. What did they do? What would they do?
We don't want to go to the hospital. Who's going to do our birth?
Yeah.
So I can say this because it's been such a long time, but we had a meeting that night, the very same night that I was arrested. I was released on my own recognizance. And we had a meeting that night, and all of the families came, and I had written little pieces of paper. And the paper said, don't say anything, but this is what you say when you need to call me when you're in labor, because I don't know if they bugged my phone. I don't know if they've bugged my office. I don't know if they bugged my home, my home. Mm-hmm. So someone would call and they would say, Mary's house burned down in the middle of the night. And that was a signal to go to, you know,
Mary's house burned down.
Whichever fit the Jones family. I did every single birth. All nine of those babies at home.
Phenomenal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which probably meant the world to those families and those mothers. Because, you need to be able to choose. Let's take a quick snack break. This snack break is brought to you by Jerky Beef Jerky. When late night editing episodes for the podcast, Jerky Beef Jerky keeps me fueled and ready to go with 11 grams of protein, high-quality ingredients, and no nitrates or nitrites. With 5 different flavors to choose from, Jerky Beef Jerky. Eat, meat, repeat. Roberta, you know, to pick back up, your practice emphasizes heavily on inclusivity. Oh my gosh, I can't speak tonight. For diverse populations such as Christian, Jewish, Amish, Hispanic, and LGBTQ+, and more, how do you approach culturally competent care?
Look, I'm not, you know, my first concern is clinical safety, you know, that the baby is doing well, the mother's doing well. But the other part of doing well is to be respectful of the context in which someone has grown up. Our old order Amish families make different choices than our English families, potentially, and different choices than our gay families. And we are there to be respectful of those choices and to be honoring of those choices and to be non-judgmental and to figure out what can we do to make each family feel that way. How do we undergird them, if you will, in a way that empowers them to live freely and live in any way that they have chosen? And I think sometimes the hospital system impedes that as well. You know, there's something called the Cartesian medical model right now that says that life should be preserved at all costs, and only those perfect lives, right? So there's a lot of genetic screening in the beginning. Women of advanced maternal age have genetic screening. You know, maybe they are going to find out that they've got a baby that's Down syndrome, and if they do that early enough, they have a chance to terminate. I mean, that's not a choice that any of our old order Amish families would make. Their feeling is that whatever God gives them is a blessing. Mm-hmm. And so to approach them that way, to understand how they feel, to understand how they think, and to be respectful of that is important. And they don't perhaps feel the way a gay couple feels, right? Mm-hmm. But my job is, again, to undergird every single one of those people and bathe them in empathy and understanding and respect, and to have an idea of each culture. What does each culture hold as important, right? And to know what to say and to know what not to say. And for heaven's sakes, to tap into the subtleties of the way people live, mm-hmm. right? So tapping in is very important, right? And and so it's not my show, if you will, but in the hospital, it is. There's a set of protocols. It's very defensively structured. I understand if I had an obstetrician here right now, I would guess that person would say, you know, litigation is always looming. It's the lawyer's fault. Hmm. And I understand that and I appreciate that. But the entirety of the system is wrong. And so if you align yourself with a system that's historically wrong, you are wrong too.
Yeah. I like how you said you're not pulling the strings. You're not making decisions. Like at some hospitals, you know, they come in and say, this is what we're doing. Here, you're just kind of giving them options and guiding them.
Well, I mean, look, if heart tones are tanking, you know, I have that conversation with them and I tell them my opinion, you know, it's not going well. And thank God we have a hospital to transfer into. And I really appreciate, and I think I have not said this enough, I appreciate and I admire our high-risk neonatologists, our obstetricians, when a section is necessary. These are brilliant people who've studied all their lives, and I appreciate that. They don't have any place, however, in normal physiological birth. Dr. Marsden Wagner, who is gone now, and I miss him a lot, who wrote The Pursuit of the Birth Machine, used to say, you know, you don't call a pediatrician to babysit your children. It's overkill.
Yeah.
So, and it's done in Holland, right, beautifully, where midwives take care of low-risk women at home, and obstetricians take care of women with problems. That's the model that we should have here in the United States.
Makes sense. How does you have a nonprofit, right? Open Hands?
We do.
How does that work? Tell me
about
that.
So it's not working right now. It's something that we have in the wings. Once we have Mountain Laurel really up and running, this is what we're hoping for. We're hoping that Mountain Laurel Open Hands is a way to make sure that every family, despite socioeconomic level, is able to have a home birth. And so we'll be developing that not-for-profit in the future. It's opened. It's a 501c, but it needs to be developed, and it will be developed.
Excellent.
So that no one is ever turned away in terms of cost.
Yeah, which even that alone is like, to be turned away in your moment of need, you know.
Yep.
It's just a wild.
Especially when you are wedded to home and that's where you feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, animals go where they feel safe. Mamas go where they feel safe too. So to tell someone that they have to have a hospital birth when they're, I mean, I would have done anything to stay home.
To stay home, yeah.
That's where I felt comfortable. That's where I wanted to be. That's what the place I trusted. Yeah. I did not trust the hospital system because of the high rates of intervention and everything I had read. And I was wedded to being home.
Yeah, where you're comfortable.
Where
it
I was
does
comfortable.
Make sense. Right. At the end of the day, it makes a lot of sense. So you've attended over 1,500 births. Is there a story or moment that stands out as profoundly meaningful to you?
Gosh, I don't know. There's a wonderful midwife in Pennsylvania who wrote on Facebook a couple months ago that after hundreds and hundreds of births, it never gets old. And then I wrote back, after thousands of births, it never gets old.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could pick... I can't pick. I've been able to witness 1,500 times a mother seeing her newborn for the first time. Usually, often they're redemption births. They're births after she's had a birth that was really disempowering, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like those the best because you just see on their face, I did it. I reclaimed my autonomy. I reclaimed my power.
Mm-hmm.
I reclaimed the wisdom and intuition that I had about my own body. I didn't let anybody take it. It's really wonderful to see that. It's really wonderful to see that.
Yeah, over 1,500 miracles you've witnessed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they are... I don't want to sound glib about it, but I'm not sure I think they're miracles. I think that birth is pretty normal and natural. In that regard, it looks like one big bodily function to me. I don't, you know, it's just like, okay. I think what is more powerful is not what I watch physiologically, but what I watch emotionally. When I watch someone reclaim themselves, when I watch someone step out of the system that has petrified them and has made them fearful of their own body, and all their coworkers said, you know, you're having a home birth, that's crazy. And their mother said, what are you doing? That's preposterous, you're going to die there. When a woman says, no, I'm not, this is what I was designed to do, I have the power to bring my own baby forward, it's powerful. I mean, because it crosses over into so many other avenues, right? I know my own strength as a woman, I know my own power as a woman, and for me, when I had that home birth, it was the beginning of a powerful journey. I was able to go back to college and do well. I hadn't been able before. There was something shifted in this, the idea of being able not to listen to anybody else's story and trust my own body. Mm-hmm. It was really powerful.
Wow. I got to ask you then, how can our listeners connect with you and follow along on your journey? And where can they find you on the interwebs?
www.mountainlaurelmidwifery. There's a button to book in for a free consultation.
Okay.
We would love to, I mean, we're crazy busy, but there's always room for more, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess I don't, we got to cap it at some number. I guess I am 62, but certainly we can refer to other midwives if we're full, and we just want to make sure everybody has a great home birth experience, and we're wedded to that. So, and we're always looking for people to help with the not-for-profit. It's sort of kind of at a standstill because I'm just crazy busy, but anybody that wants to, we need to form the board, and we need to get scholarships going, and we need to get the word out to low socioeconomic women who think that they can't access this, because that's who needs it the most. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who need that kind of midwifery care, someone walking by them, you know, side by side, and just every moment of that journey, and just encouraging them and empowering them, right?
Yeah. Well, I got to mention, you look great for 62.
Thank you. 62. Thanks,
no,
so
seriously,
much.
It's I would not have thought that.
Thank you very much.
So are you, like, you don't have a board now? You're running this all, doing this all on
your own?
So,
again, the not-for-profit is at a state, is on a, you know, a, it's yeah. it's not, it's just at a standstill. It's got to be developed. It's something that's going to be developed in the future. When I came, I only arrived in April, and I thought, well, you know, it's, as you well know, it's a lot to run a business, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of finishing touches, and we run it like a well-oiled machine. There's a lot of moving parts.
Yes.
We have a marketer. We have a lot of things going on, right, to make sure that we reach all areas of the market. And so the not-for-profit really had to sort of sit still while we developed the for-profit part.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's always in the back of my mind, because we're getting more and more calls, and, you know, we have had people who's, you know, we run their insurance and they just can't come up with it. And, we've been getting creative. I won't say too much else, but we've been getting creative. We haven't been, and we don't want to turn people away, mm-hmm. but, you know, I don't know how much longer I can do that. So, we've got to develop this, and we've got to find the funds to be able to pay the midwives and also make it affordable to every family.
So I got to ask you, because prior to recording, we spoke on the phone a little bit, and you mentioned you have like 9 or so births coming up. In a year, how many do you personally oversee?
Can I go back and just fill in one other thing I want people to know about Mount Laurel Midwifery that I forgot?
Yeah,
we are now, just in the last 2 weeks, we're bilingual. So we now can serve a Spanish-speaking families. We have a wonderful new student who's rocking it out, and she is she's Spanish-speaking, and so we're now advertising as being able to take those families. And I think, again, that's an untapped, you know, a lot of 100%. Our Hispanic families don't know that they can have a home birth.
Mm-hmm.
Now I forgot your question.
No, you're good. You're good. Did you want to shout? What was her first name? Do you know?
Her first name is Amanda De Leon, and we're thrilled to have her. And she's been rocking it out the last couple of weeks. She just came to me a few weeks ago, and I was really looking and praying for a student and kind of not connecting with the right one. But she's definitely it. She's an EMT and an LPN, and going to really just be a real asset.
Shout out to Amanda.
Thank you so much, Amanda. We love you a lot.
Excellent, excellent. So, you know, to go back, my question was just, like, you personally, in a year's time, how many births?
Well,
like a rough estimate.
Listen,
I'm just curious.
This old midwife has never seen anything like. There must be something in the water in Lancaster.
Yeah.
but I was told by my older colleagues that if I wanted to do volume, I think I have about 15 good years left in me, and I would love to do volume, that Lancaster was it. So I thought, well, it'll take about a year to do 8 births a month, to cap it at 8, and that's certainly plenty of money, and it's a good volume.
Yeah.
And I'm there now.
Wow.
So you've only been in this area. I got here in April.
In April. Wow.
So we're there now.
So there is such a need.
There's an incredible
need.
And one of it is, you know, it really comes from our old order Amish families, mm-hmm. Who, you know, there's such a volume of births. But I'm getting also a lot of English families in my practice.
Yeah.
So I'm tapped out for, but don't hesitate to call. But right now we're tapped out for December, January, February, and now the calls are coming in for March. So I had no idea it would happen so quickly. I think that they see that, you know, I've been in practice for 38 years and I'm well-credentialed, and so I think that matters. So
they say proof is in the pudding.
Yeah. That's right.
To learn more about Mountain Laurel Midwifery, check the show notes. If you took something away from this episode, please share it, leave a review, and subscribe to American Girl Podcast for more incredible stories from the heart of our community. Roberta, if you're good, I'm gonna wrap it up. If there's anything else you'd like to
let I want to tell know. Everybody in Pennsylvania, please vote and call your senators and say no to SB 507, which is a very deleterious bill to home birth midwives. We can't let SB 507 pass, and we need every single citizen to call their representatives and say no to SB 507, Senate Bill 507.
Roberta, thank you for sharing your expertise, empathy, and dedication. Your work reminds us that choices in birth matter, and that respectful and accessible care should be available to all. Roberta, founder of Mountain Laurel Midwifery, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors. A&M Pizza, authentic Italian food made with the finest quality ingredients. Proudly serving the Lebanon and Lancaster area since 1980. Stop by their Campbelltown location today. You'll be happy you did. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today. Are you in the mood for getting out of your house this evening? Head over to Boyer's Tavern in Rexmont, PA. They have appetizers, soups, salads, wings, mouth-watering burgers, sandwiches, and many other entrees to choose from. Proper food and drinks made by slightly improper folks. Head over to Boyer's Tavern today or give them a call at 717-450-4063.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.